From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made last June when the city of Rochester announced it planned to consider a citywide composting program. The proposed program would be an extension of the city's recycling program, which was launched 30 years ago. As reported by the Democrat and Chronicle, Rochester was the first major city in New York State outside of New York City to tackle recycling. And now the city is looking at what could be next related to composting, green waste, and organics. Organics recycling faces a number of barriers, not only in our community, but across the country, where efforts to reduce food waste and recycle food scraps have increased in recent years. Next week, nearly 200 people will discuss those challenges and share success stories at the 2019 New York State Organics Summit in Fairport. This hour, we'll get a preview of that conference. We'll also discuss the current state of organics management and how our guests hope to improve that process. Joining us here in studio, hello to Jesse Kearns, Program Coordinator for the Syracuse University Center for Sustainable Community Solutions and Chair of the Organics Council for NYSAR 3. Jesse, welcome. Thanks for being here.
Thank you for having me.
Also with us is Missy Hall, a P2 engineer for the New York State Pollution Prevention Institute. Missy, welcome to you.
Thank you.
And Brent Arnold is co-founder of Community Composting. Brent, welcome to you as well.
Thrilled to be here.
On the line with us is Christine Ellsworth, environmental engineer for the New York State Department of Environmental Conservation. Christine, welcome to you. Thanks for taking the time.
Thanks for having us.
We are going this hour, I told all of our guests in studio, we're going to get questions from listeners as we always do. You cannot say composting without people wanting to know all kinds of questions about home composting, how it works, which is fine this hour. We're going to cover a broad range, though. We're going to look at what organizations, businesses can do. We're going to look at what has changed, what the expectations are. And yes, success stories, but also what lies ahead as we sort of preview what's coming up in the summit next week. But yes, I promised you, listeners, if you had questions about that, we can go ahead and hit that. And, you know, Brent, I think I already have two questions about whether we should even use the garbage disposal at home. Do you want to just hit that right out of the gate?
I'd be happy to.
Should we use the garbage disposal at home? Get that out of the way for everyone who's asking.
You know, my opinion is no. When we use the garbage disposal, we're putting it into our wastewater stream, which is a huge resource. There's a much better place for those food scraps to go, and that's in the compost.
So the easy answer is you don't do it, no.
Don't do it.
Okay. All right. So that now that that's out of the way, there's a lot to talk about with the summit next week. And I kind of want to go around the table and ask all four of our guests what they're looking forward to most, because there's so much that is, at least from my perspective, not just changing, but public education and community education, business education, organization education about what is possible when it comes to this kind of these kinds of efforts. What do you want to see come out of the summit? What are you looking forward to, Brent?
I want to see more businesses getting involved, understanding the options that are out there. I'd also like to see a lot of talk about what kind of legislation can be put in place to encourage composting, both for organizations, businesses that produce a lot of waste, as well as for the smaller businesses and homes, even residential, to get their food scraps out of the landfill and composted.
Okay, very good. Missy, what about you?
I'm really looking forward to just the networking aspect of this conference. We've had it for the last couple of years, and it moves around across the state, and it's a great opportunity for new people to share their successes and lessons learned with other areas of the state. It's a really collaborative group that runs the Organic Summit and that attends every year, so I'm just looking forward to that collaboration again this year.
All right. Jesse, go ahead.
So I'm really looking forward this year to all the highlights that are going to come out of the Rochester area. So each year we've been moving the summit around. And this year, since we're in Rochester, we're really going to feature some of the great things going on here. Also, another session is going to highlight up-and-coming recyclers, which will really point to other areas in the state where this type of organics sustainable management is going to come online and we're going to have capacity for it. And then the last thing, I'm really looking at the end of the system. So I'm hoping to draw more people to the table so that we have end use of finished compost, and that's going to create a market, and that's going to drive this whole engine.
That's something we're going to want to talk about this hour as well. End use of finished compost. Great. Christine, what about you?
This year in particular, I'm really looking forward to all the facilitated discussion that's going to happen. A lot of our sessions are going to be more based on having discussions and interacting with the audience over presentations, which I think will be really great. And I'm really looking forward to to kind of picking the brain of the audience, see how can we promote composting facilities in New York State communities, public and private, and how can we, you know, better support organics recyclers that are looking to start up.
Well, so let's talk about that. And I'm going to turn to Brent Arnold, who's co-founder of Community Composting. Why don't you tell our listeners what it is that you're doing now and what the need is, how your kind of week-to-week and month-to-month work has maybe changed and evolved with more interest and more demand, I guess.
Sure. So Community Composting was started about 6 years ago with a friend of mine. And since then, we've been growing really steadily, and we're really excited for the future. So we offer a handful of services. We're mostly geared towards residential. That's sort of our bread and butter. But last year, we started a new program that's really getting some good traction, which is encouraging offices to start composting in their workplace. So they can have a bin right in their office kitchen, throw all their food scraps, paper towels, anything compostable, and we'll actually come into their office and service their bins directly. It's so easy to do, and it makes the office workplace just kind of feel good about what they're diverting from the landfill.
I'm sure you have people go, yeah, it sounds easy, but doesn't it start to smell?
It doesn't. You know, we get that question all the time. The trick is to keep it in a cool, dry place that's anywhere indoor, and then service it once a week, and it's really not a problem.
Can we just be real, too? Everyone who's ever worked in an office setting, your office refrigerator is a composter. What is happening? What is happening in office refrigerators that is any more disgusting than would be happening in a composter?
Well, one
it
argument.
It is a trash heap in there.
That's very true. Well, it's refrigerated, but I say, well, what's the difference between throwing it in your waste bin? You still have food sitting there. Mm-hmm. You have to put it in some kind of receptacle. It might as well be a compost bin.
Do you find that businesses are going to be, or have been at least, surprised when they say, oh my goodness, the amount of food waste?
They are. You know, roughly half of what ends up in the landfill is compostable. So it's no surprise that we see, you know, big waste streams being diverted when people start composting.
All right. So those are just a few ideas from Brent, by the way. And Community Composting, where can people find you?
Communitycomposting.org. You can sign up online. We'll deliver a bin to your door.
We're going to come back, because Brent mentioned out of the outset here, interest about legislation or what, you know, sort of how we're kind of stitching policy together to address this, because it's not just a nice idea. I mean, this is important. We're talking about landfill use. We're talking about waste that impacts all of us. So we'll come back to that in a bit here. Missy, why don't you tell us a little bit about the work that you're doing as an engineer for P2I, we say, Pollution Prevention Institute.
Yeah, you got that right. So P2I is based here in Rochester, New York. We're at RIT, and we have funding from the state to do all sorts of things, including helping businesses and other organizations overcome challenges to be more sustainable. And one of our big areas that we focus on, and I oversee the work for P2I, is around food waste management. So that includes helping businesses understand where and how to divert their organics from landfill, looking at source reduction, which is a great opportunity for households and businesses to save money, as well as on the residential side, what communities can do to educate residents, to get involved with folks like community composting to divert their organics or start composting at home as well.
Do you feel like we are... you know, we've gone from sort of 0 to 60 on education on composting. It feels 3 to 5 years, it feels massive, the interest in this.
Yeah, absolutely. P2I started to get involved right when it got a lot more attention from the state, but we're getting more and more requests to help and provide service and education and training from both the residential community side as well as on the business side. People are really focusing in on this topic. It's something that people understand why it's important.
Well, Jesse, you mentioned the end use of finished compost, because that is, you're right. We are not, most of us, not thinking that far ahead. We're thinking, well, you know, again, where, how can we get this out? Does it feel good to get it out in a way that, okay, it's not going to go to a landfill, but end use? Let's talk about that.
Sure. So there's so much to talk about that, too. And you had mentioned briefly legislation. So, and we can get into this a little bit more later, too. But if we have mandatory diversion of organics in New York State, we're going to need someplace for all that finished compost to go. And that's a lot. That's going to be more than you can handle in all of your backyard gardens at home. So we need some larger, more consistent applications, too. And so some things that we've been investigating through the Organics Council, which is a working group with NYSAR, the New York State Association for Reduction, Reuse, and Recycling. We've been talking to the Department of Transportation. So when roadways are being reconstructed and you have maybe ditch management or something that's being changed on the side of the roads, you can use compost as an application there for the when you're going to put new turf back on that. It'll help with turf establishment. There's lots of large applications like that. I, with my work at Syracuse University, our department is the Center for Sustainable Community Solutions. So we operate under large federal grants through the USDA and the EPA. We work with communities on these topics, and recently I've been in a lot of K-12 schools promoting this practice of composting as a way for them to cut down on their operational costs and to create some educational opportunities. So by creating compost there on site, they can decrease maybe their waste hauling costs from the school, but then they end up with this finished product that they can use on their athletic fields or they could use in their gardens if they have one at their school. So there's lots of things that we can look into for that.
What's it look like when they're creating this on site?
It looks like you have these, a lot of schools go with a 3 or 4 bay system, and so they're these wooden boxes that they create at least 5 feet cubed, and you layer in your food scraps pre and post plate, and then you're also mixing in a good bulking agent like wood chips. That's your carbon-based component to that. And so they build up these piles, and then often skid steers or forklifts are used to turn the material.
Christine, I feel like we're going to talk, certainly we're going to take more questions from listeners about home use, but I feel like from home use to businesses all throughout the community, so much of this is just about sort of normalizing it. You know, to the extent that, you know, I was at a mall not that long ago with kids, and they're looking around going, how come the food court doesn't have anything for recycling? Well, so kids are more used to looking around for this, but for years as a society, we just haven't normalized it. So what feels hard or weird or different probably becomes normal pretty quickly if we kind of choose that. How do you feel about that, Christine?
Yeah, no, it's a really great point. I'm glad you bring it up. So I would say composting and organics diversion in general right now is about where recycling was 20 to 25 years ago. You know, it was something that local communities really had to push. And like you said, now recycling is completely normalized and people are looking for it if it's not there. So, you know, that ultimately that's really where we want to get with organics recycling. And I think we've made a lot of progress, like you've said, in the last 3 to 5 years. And composting, I think the really exciting part about it is, unlike, you know, the garbage or recycling, you put, like, you know, let's say you put a plastic bottle into the recycling bin, that goes to a recycling facility, and that plastic is then sent, you know, maybe locally and state across the United States, internationally. You don't know where that product ultimately ends up. But with composting, you know, you're putting your food scraps into that composting organics bin, and that's probably being sent to a facility that's within an hour of you, and that compost is most likely then going right back into your local community for stormwater management, landscaping on farms, you know, any other sort of local use. So I think that's what's really exciting, and that's a big, in my opinion, outreach and educational tool for us.
Yeah, you know, Jesse, keeping it local, thinking about application in communities, I don't know. I mean, I think that probably makes it even more accessible, an idea that this isn't kind of going far away. Maybe that motivates more, perhaps more of a motivating factor for people getting in to participate in doing this?
Absolutely. I think any time that we can see the direct effect that we have on our environments around us, it's going to impact how we behave. So if we can see the direct impacts of positive behaviors, it's just going to encourage us to do it more. Absolutely.
All right. So listeners, I've already got some emails and I see the phone ringing, but that's fine. Let's talk about composting. Let's talk about whether you do it or don't at work, at home, for your organizations, what you want to see happen. Does it feel accessible? Does it feel like it's something that would be easy or not easy to do, whether you're talking about home or work in different settings? You can call the program. It's toll-free, 844-295-TALK. It's 844-295-8255 or 263-WXXI if you're in Rochester, 263-9994. Brent already said he doesn't mind if you ask him specific questions about what you can and can't compost. He's got a shirt that, there's a sticker on his shirt that says, ask me about compost, and it's a rotting apple core. So it's cool.
Thank you.
So we're going to hit that. And I kind of want me one of those stickers.
I brought extra.
But I don't know enough about compost yet, so I'm only going to wear them when I do. 844-295-TALK or 263-WXXI if you're calling from Rochester. Email the program connections at WXXI.org. Now, I haven't mentioned all that much about registration for the 2019 New York State Organic Summit because registration's closed, but I have been told they're willing to consider accepting walk-ins. So if you want to go next Tuesday and Wednesday, I think, is when it is at Casa Larga. This is a summit, and you can check out NYSAR3, that's NYSAR3.org, for more information. So maybe people can walk in, join you there, yeah?
We have had walk-ins in the past, yes. I don't want to throw my colleague Lisa under the bus, because if there's too many, it might over-inundate her. But we're totally open to people being excited about this topic and coming to the table and listening to hear what some really great folks in the industry are doing and what still needs to be done. So we're definitely welcoming to anyone that would like to join us, absolutely.
All right, John in Rochester first on the phone. Go ahead, John.
How you doing, guys?
Very good. Good, sir.
I've been doing this for 50 years, 5-0, composting in the backyard, growing vegetables, all kinds of stuff like that. I'm trying to get the kids on the street involved to bring their waste to my house and put it in, but then I got caught by the net officer. It was blown in by that, and I had a fine because I was composting.
What?
Yep. And I paid a good fine.
Well, hold on. Before you go on here, cause I want to know exactly what's going on. Brent, are you familiar with that? Can people get fined for composting?
I have never heard of that before. However, I have heard of neighbors complaining, and every neighborhood is different. But I suppose, depending on the municipality, you could get a fine for it. One of the problems is rodents, sometimes if it's not maintained well. Mm. But really, if anybody wants to complain, then, you might be in a little risk there.
I mean, John, you didn't have, like, some sort of a commercial scale operation here that you didn't have a permit for, did you?
No, I got four garbage cans, and now I have a neighbor gave me a 8x4 piece of wood block, and I started putting the stuff in there and showing the kids what to do, and I got fined for it. So I'm not going to worry about it. It's properly since the early 1800s of doing it in Monroe County. Now, why would I get fined for it? That's the thing. Another thing, how would I get to your place because I don't drive?
So community composting, yeah, we actually yours. Come to you, pick up your food scraps, and give you a clean bin so you're ready to go for the next
how
week.
How can I come to you to learn? I mean, I know how to do it. I've been doing it, like I said, for 50 years. But how can I come to your meeting because I don't drive?
Oh, I don't know. I say, okay, well.
That's the thing is a problem. You're out in Fairport. I'm in the city of Rochester.
John, it's a fair question, and I'm really glad you called. I hope hope you don't get fined again for composting. Do you want to jump in there, Jesse?
Go ahead. So for those folks who aren't able to make it that day either, I do want to mention that afterwards on the NYSAR website, we will be putting up all of the presentations from that day. So there's going to be lots of great information going up on there afterwards that you can access and really take your time to work through.
And I have two questions via email already on horse manure. So I'm just going to read both of them. Pat says, regarding composting horse manure, I've always believed that the manure had to be a year old in order to not burn our plants, but could it be safe to use horse manure, which has only aged for about 7 months? It has been left as is in the pasture, not in the manure pile. Thank you for this program. Ellen says, can your guest tell us if there is a way for horse owners to join community composting? Our little farm produces 200 pounds of horse manure every day. Okay, so what do we know about that?
You know, I don't have any direct experience with composting horse manure, but I do know that it's being done all over the place. There is Noblehurst Farms, our friends of natural upcycling. They have a digester. I know that they take a lot of waste from their dairy farms. I know that Vermagreen out in Palmyra takes a lot of that material as well. So you might want to call them and talk to them about composting your horse manure.
Okay.
Yeah, absolutely. It's going to depend on a variety of factors, so the weather conditions and how big your piles are and all of that sort of thing. So it's not a precise thing, right? What I will say is you do want to be careful not to put compost that isn't cured on anything that you like your vegetable garden or your lawns, because you do have that danger of those nutrients burning the roots of your plants. So a good way to test when you're at home composting is you can take a little bit of your finished compost and put it in some sort of, it could be a little plastic bag, leave it for a day. If you open it up and it smells like rotten eggs, it means it's not ready yet. You need to keep that compost going a little bit longer.
What should it smell like?
It should smell like a sweet kind of crumbly earth, really. It shouldn't have any food or unpleasant smell. It should be more of a pleasant smell.
How long does it take to get to that point?
It can. It depends on the size of your pile and the materials you're using, but anywhere between 6 and 12 months.
Okay. And again, this hour is going to be a mix of talking compost specifics and also talking policy and all of the innovating things that are happening. We're going to talk about up-and-coming recyclers and all kinds of things coming up here. But just to kind of close the loop on that, because we've got more callers on the specific stuff. I've recalled in the past being told, hey, be careful. You may not have enough, was it brown in your recycling? So
yep.
Kind of leaf compost material. And it's supposed to be a lot more brown than green, if I
remember.
That's
right.
Is that correct?
Mm-hmm. That's correct. You can have, I mean, the ideal ratio, they say, is really 20 or 30 to 1 browns to greens.
Wow, I thought it was 90%, 10%, but even more than that.
Right. However, you can have a pretty successful compost with even as low as 2 to 1 or 3 to 1.
Okay, but that means in my composter, what I started doing was just, you know, when leaves would fall, just kind of put them in there and fill up the composter mostly with fallen leaves along with then the food scraps, yes?
Absolutely. In fact, it's a common pitfall for home composting not to add enough carbon-rich material to your nitrogen.
Yep. Okay. Is there anything besides leaves that you could use?
Yeah, you can use sawdust. You can use newspapers. You can use wood chips. You want to be careful with the stick sizes. If you get too big, they're just going to sit in there for a while, which might not be a bad thing because when you have larger, bulkier items in the middle of your pile, water can get down through to the middle and oxygen can get down through. And that's that oxygen component is really important from keeping your compost from getting smelly.
But you may eventually, when you're kind of using it, pull out some solid sticks or semi-solid sticks at some point.
Yeah, and then you just toss them back into your next pile.
Okay. I am really learning a lot this hour already. Roy in Rochester next. Go ahead, Roy.
Yeah, not so much the compost, but before it got to the compost, I'd walk across the street to the public market and get all the corn shucks from a day's worth there. It's all cellulose. Put it in a little washing soda, boil it, make paper.
Okay.
Interesting. I've never heard that used for corn shucks before.
Yeah, but that's a great example of ways that businesses and residents as well are getting creative with different uses for food. Composting is great. It's a really good option because it can handle a lot of diversity, but we're seeing businesses thinking about their waste streams and how they can turn it into a value. So thanks for calling in. That was really creative.
Yeah, very much so. Thank you, Roy. Pam wants to know, why isn't it against the law not to compost, especially if you're a large-scale business? Well, okay, let's talk a little bit about policy and what is required and what is not required. So Christine Ellsworth, environmental engineer for the New York State Department of Environmental Conservation. I don't know how authoritatively you want to try to speak on that one, but I think Pam's question, why isn't it against the law, knowing everything that we know now, for especially the larger your organization or your business is, not to do something in regards to food waste? So what does the law tell us, or at least what do you think we need to say to Pam there?
Yeah, so this is something that's kind of been in the works for the past couple of years now. Organics diversion legislation, as we generally refer to it as, is already in law and regulation in some of the states surrounding us, such as Vermont, Massachusetts. We even have it down in our own New York City. On the state level, it's something that DEC is supportive of. We just haven't been able to get it through legislation. I can't speak too extensively to it, but I know right now that there are some bills proposed in both the Senate and the legislative. So when the budget closes and when the legislative session ends, we'll kind of see where all of that plays out.
Okay. I want to ask all of our guests, and let's go around the table. Jesse Kearns, what do you want to see happen next in terms of policy-wise? Are you satisfied with some of the movement we've seen in this?
I am not satisfied yet. I want to see quicker movement. So there are some states surrounding New York right now that have already beaten us to some of this policy. So you're looking at states like Connecticut and Massachusetts and Vermont. They tend to be leading this. And last year or the year before, no, it was a little over last year ago, I was at Harvard. What they did is they took those state legislations and they made it into this great publication for other states that haven't passed legislation yet to look at. And so they could kind of pick and choose this legal language to fit their state. And I would just love to see New York pass some legislation on mandatory diversion for large generators first. So starting out there, you're talking about those entities, food product manufacturers who make 2 ton or more per week.
So pretty big operations.
Absolutely.
And how much of that do we see, you know, in this region?
That's a good question. I can't speak to the Rochester area for do you have
Rochester Finger Lakes region?
About how many businesses?
I mean, how many would qualify at least for that kind of legislation? 2 tons per week, you said, right?
Yeah. Yep.
That's a lot.
Yeah.
It would be about, I think there's about 500 businesses across the whole state.
It's a lot. It's a big number. What are the kinds of businesses, by the way, Christine?
So, yeah, the kind of businesses that would fall into this are large-scale restaurants, hospitals, grocery stores, kind of things like that. Things that are, you know, there's a lot of people going there. There's just a lot of excess food. And something I want to point out, too, to the legislation that, you know, has been talked about, and composting is very important, but we want to make sure that the food scraps are going to composting and that any food that is still wholesome and edible that we're going to redirect to donation or to feed animals.
Okay. Missy, what about you when you look at policy? What's going on in sort of in your world when it comes to policy?
I think the big thing for me is just the infrastructure development. So whether the policy is there or not, it's kind of a chicken and egg situation right now where there's a lot of interest. But, you know, I think we still have some ways to go in terms of access to composting and anaerobic digestion facilities, which is another alternative to composting. So I think that's what I'm really looking forward to, is having the capacity to be able to take on this material and then use it as well.
Okay, Brent?
You know, I actually went to the Vermont Organics and Recycling Summit a few years back, and I learned a little bit about their system, and I thought it was really smart the way that they approached it, because they basically said this new legislation is going to go into effect, but we're going to do it in tiers. So we're going to try to get, you know, these 500 businesses that are producing all of this waste as sort of the low-hanging fruit, so to speak, first, and that will be in the next 2 years. And then, you know, 3 years after that, we're going to go anybody that's making more than 500 pounds a week. And then after that, they actually had one for residential composting, too. So by the end of it, you have everybody composting, and this kind of gives a chance for haulers like Community Composting to prepare for these legislative changes.
When do you haul? When do you pick up?
We pick up every day of the week. Right now, we have 2 routes per day.
All right, so 2 routes per day. So if I'm on your list, I know it's going to be X, you know, one of the days, or how many days a week are you coming?
So we'll come to residents. We come every week, or we'll even come every other week if you are really not producing that much.
Okay. So all things that you can learn if you want to check out more on communitycomposting.org. Communitycomposting.org. Chris writes to us to say, please let your guests know I plan to walk in on Tuesday and maybe Wednesday as a representative of Canandaigua Green Committee. Excited to be there. I want to do pet waste trials someday soon. Any comments on this would be welcome. Pet waste.
You know, this is something I've thought a lot about, because
most people have.
A few people of our customers might remember this as well, but we did a little pilot program called Kitty Composting, where we would pick up cat litter and cat waste with a compostable cat litter, which was based on a recycled newspaper product. We thought it was really cool. However, it takes a really special processing facility to be able to handle that kind of waste. Cat waste could be a problem, particularly with toxoplasmosis. That's a danger and a concern. So handling that is kind of questionable. And we really didn't have the whole infrastructure put in place, so we kind of nixed the idea. But I think it's still a good idea, and I think that there is a solution for that in the future.
Okay. Thanks for that, Chris. Kevin writes to us from Geneva, listening on Finger Lakes Public Radio WEOS. Kevin says, composting in Geneva, you know, it's not enforced, but Geneva has laws and restrictions against home composting within city limits, and I'm guessing a lot of other communities do too. Christine, do you hear about that? I mean, are there maybe unenforced or sometimes enforced laws against this that we ought to know about? Are you there, Christine?
Right in the city.
Oh, go ahead. I'm sorry. Go ahead, Christine.
Oh, yep. We have heard of this in other cities. Unfortunately, I'm not really sure if they're just laws that went in effect and have just, you know, they've been outdated. But I would really urge any resident who really wants to compost to, you know, approach your local government and get a group together and show that this is something that's a viable option for the residents.
Yeah, I think that's a good point. And Kevin, thanks for that. I mean, if you know of a law on the books enforced or not against composting, it might be worth asking your local council. Why is it on the books? Is it enforced? And And what should we do about that? I'm going to take John and Hector, Christine and Canandaigua on the phone. We've got Deirdre's email and many more to read. We could probably do composting all weekend if you like, because there's so many interesting questions about how it works, what we're doing at home, what policy is there, and what's been changing, what's making it more accessible in so many ways. You just heard Christine Ellsworth on the line with us, an environmental engineer for the New York State Department of Environmental Conservation. Brent Arnold is here from Community Composting. Missy Hall is an engineer for the New York State Pollution Prevention Institute. Jesse Kearns, program coordinator for the Syracuse University Center for Sustainable Community Solutions and chair of the Organics Council for NYSAR 3. And they're all here because coming up Tuesday and Wednesday, Casa Larga Vineyards in Fairport is hosting the 2019 New York State Organics Summit. So let's take that only break, and we're right back to more of your feedback next. I'm Evan Dawson. Monday on The Next Connections, how can comedy and art be used to address serious issues like race and climate change? Actor and activist Peterson Toscano works on all of that through storytelling, comedy, art, and more. He's in Rochester. He'll talk to us on Connections. And we're talking in our second hour about how waste is handled in the Finger Lakes, what the rules are and aren't, and who's involved in the fight. Talk with you Monday. This is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. John in Hector is on the phone next. Go ahead, John.
Yeah, so two things. One, I work for a winery, Hazlett 1852 Vineyards, and we compost all of our grape waste and return it to the vineyard. But that's not why I'm calling. The call is about how there needs to be way more education of the consumer itself. I've been to several ski resorts that attempt to compost. They have compost containers and then trash containers and recycling containers, and you look down in them and there's materials in the recycling container that shouldn't be in the recycling container. There's trash in the compost and recyclables in the compost, and people aren't actually paying attention, and that ends up being a real big problem for the composter than if they're getting all these other materials in with the compostables.
That's a really important point, John. I'm glad you called, because that dovetails so snugly with the recent conversation on recycling, how even just sort of grocery store plastic bags end up getting tangled up in recyclers and make things much more complicated. Or when we wish cycle, that our friend Kate McCardle from P2I often uses that phrase, though Kate's always saying, I didn't invent that phrase. But wish cycling, where you throw something in your blue bin, hoping that it could be recycled, but you don't know. Well, that could complicate things at the actual recycling facility. John's making the point that for composters, so let's talk a little bit about that. What happens here? Let's go around the table here. Yeah.
Sure. I've been to those events as well. We've worked those events, and we've kind of resolved ourselves to say that if we do have an event that we're working, we need to have somebody there at the station to help kind of cipher that trash off into the right bin. I think the real solution there, you're right, is education, and really educating at a younger age. It's really exciting to go to these schools and see all of these kids who are, you know, sorting their recyclables and their compost really well and naturally and effortlessly. Meanwhile, their parents are a little behind. And then the kids go home and they say, well, Mom, you know, that's compost. What are you doing throwing that away? I've heard that story over and over and over again, and it's just a no-brainer. We've got to teach kids at a younger age so that we can get ahead of the curve.
Any other thoughts there from our other panelists? Missy, yeah?
Yeah, at a lot of businesses we see, like restaurants and other places, we see a lot of places focusing on what their employees can handle rather than rolling it out to the public places, because those are difficult to manage, a lot of reinforcing mechanisms for education and training and proper signage. So when we're working with a new business, we focus on the kitchen areas and the back of house, as we call it, where they can really let the employees do the work, and then once they're comfortable with that, you roll it out into public places and use great signage, training, and things like that.
Okay.
Yep, Missy makes a great point. So one of the big things that we can do with public-facing spaces is that whenever we have bins, they all need to be together. So we need a trash bin, compost bin, and recycling bin right next to each other, because we have a very short period of time that we can engage people. And in addition to the bins, we need signs with both color, wording on it and pictures so that it really hammers home that message of what needs to go in each. Because this issue of contamination is huge for composters, and they do have some methods for getting some of that contamination out. So a lot of SU's food scraps go to a local composting facility just outside the city, and a lot of silverware actually ends up there, so they have a magnet that pulls that out. But the plastics can be a huge issue for them, and even compostable packaging. It's not all the same. That's going to be a session that we cover at Tuesday and Wednesday's summit, is compostable packaging. Some of it is broken down more easily than others, and it's hard for facility managers to spot check that. How can you tell this white fork is compostable and this one's petroleum-based? It's very difficult.
Yeah, wow. That's a great point, Jesse. Some businesses will start to think about all of the places where contamination can occur, and they start to replace plasticware or other silverware with things that can go in the same bin, so you're reducing the likelihood that there will be contamination.
Christine, you want to add to that?
No, I mean, I think they've pretty much summed up a lot of it, and the one thing I will say with the ski resorts and particular, those are really hard places to control the front end of the house because it's new customers every single day. Most likely you're not getting the same people, like a grocery store would. So having really simple and clear communication is key, featuring materials that you would see that can go right into the composting bin, putting a picture of that right onto your sign.
Is there something, and I guess I'll ask Brent Arnold, co-founder of Community Composting, is there a one item more than any other that ends up in composting that should not?
That's a great question. I feel like forks are pretty common.
Who's putting forks? What's happening
here? It's an absent-minded thing. I grew up in a family that we barely recycled. I learned how to be more environmentally conscious as I grew up and met different people. I think a lot of people just don't know yet. And so they see a bin and they throw it away and they haven't thought enough to, or they haven't been trained or the culture isn't there to know where to put it.
In a composter. Okay. Well, this is where I start to get a little bit worried here because, kind of, again, paralleling to recycling, we've seen China make some decisions on what they're going to take and what they're not going to take. NPR reporting that Amy Brooks, a doctoral student of engineering at the University of Georgia and the lead author of a study published in Scientific Advances on this subject, said, they've got reports of waste accumulating in places that depended on China, some of it ending up in landfills, being incinerated or sent to other countries with a lack of infrastructure to properly manage it. And by 2030, an estimated 111 million metric tons of plastic waste will be displaced because of China's recent laws basically saying we're not doing that anymore. So my concern when it comes to composting is if people continue to sort of either be lazy or uneducated, is it going to become so inefficient that it could, sort of damage the entire system? I hope not, no?
I can jump into this first. So I think a big distinction between that situation and what could potentially happen with composting is this situation of international markets. And we had a situation where China was taking the majority of these materials and then said no all of a sudden, and there was nothing else. Earlier in the show, we talked about creating local market demand, and that's what really needs to happen to make compost just have many legs and viable into the future,
And the local nature of composting and the usage of it gives us a better insulation against the sort of the China situation as we've seen with plastic recycling?
Yeah, that's my perspective. Yeah.
Okay, well, that is certainly a hopeful note there. I want to grab a couple other phone calls here. Abigail in Rochester next on the phone. Go ahead, Abigail.
Hi, everybody. My name is Abigail, as you just said, Evan. I'm excited to get to chat, and I'm enjoying this conversation about composting. I just moved here from Portland, Oregon, where they have citywide composting. So instead of having my trash come once a week, my compost got picked up once a week, and my trash actually got picked up every other week by the city. And Evan, I loved your comments about normalizing mm-hmm. the idea of composting earlier, because that's exactly what that did. When it was citywide and you couldn't have your trash sitting out rotting because it was sitting there for 2 weeks, you really had to start composting. And I'm curious if any of the panelists have looked into trying to get something like citywide composting to happen in this area.
It's a great question. And Abigail, welcome. It's great having you in Rochester, and thanks for calling the program. Let's go around the table. Let's ask all of our guests about that. Go ahead, Brent.
Sure. I have a lot of thoughts about this. I think ultimately you're absolutely right. This is where we are heading. We need to have municipal composting services available. It's the only way to make a major paradigm shift and a culture shift and get everybody involved. I live in the city of Rochester, and I get two 96-gallon toters for trash that are serviced every week. And I have one 96-gallon toter that's serviced every other week for recycling and no municipal composting service. So to me, that's sending the message of throw away as much as you want to the landfill, and also we're going to take some recyclables for you, and composting doesn't exist.
Missy.
I can't speak specifically to the city of Rochester, but I will say it is a growing interest area for a lot of places around the state. So I'm hopeful that something happens here in Rochester, maybe with some momentum with our organic summit and our conversation today. But I know it's a big topic area around the state. And what's nice also, I'm a process person, so I'll say this, is that if the city of the Rochester moved forward with something, it's not like we'd be the first ones to do it. Speaking of Oregon, there's a lot of great things going on out there. So we would have a footprint to follow, which is really good news.
Okay. And not only just Oregon, but if you look down to New York City, they've been rolling out curbside composting borough by borough for the last couple of years. They've hit a couple of hiccups, but it's really just growing pains. It's just really getting the education out there. I had an interesting discussion. I was listening to their Department of Sanitation talk about this effort. They had to translate their educational materials into 12 different languages, but there are over 200 languages spoken in New York City. So it's a gigantic undertaking, but they're getting their way through it. And I think, you know, we'll see some really positive things come out of the city. Obviously, that's much different than communities up here, but there's other communities we can look to for models too. So down in Tompkins County in Ithaca, they have curbside composting programs. If you look over in Scarsdale, New York, down by Westchester County, they have some as well. So bit by bit, they're starting to come online. My office in Syracuse, we're not starting residentially, but we're hoping to kick up a conversation with restaurants in the downtown. And if we can get enough of them interested, we'll create that route density necessary for a pickup. So we'll start with the big entities and then maybe work our way down to residents.
Okay, and Christine?
Yeah, and I would say, as Jesse mentioned, so there's some communities that are starting residential pickup, but a good place for communities, cities, towns, villages, whatever size they are, to start is to start drop-off programs. So that's when the local government will set up a spot in the community where residents can bring their food scraps to drop off. And it kind of helps the local government gauge what the interest is in the neighborhood, so then they can move forward with an economic plan for residential pickup.
It does sound in many ways that whether it's a law against composting at home or opportunities to change what the city is offering or not offering, a lot of it is just communicating directly with your elected representatives and sort of voicing what you want to see out there. And again, sort of normalizing what seems abnormal right now. As Abigail mentioned, in Portland, things change. So Joel writes to the program to say Tetra Pak used to offer grants to communities to break aseptic packaging into its three components, metal, plastic, and paper, the third ingredient of which was composted to create black gold that landscapers can't get enough of. Could we do that here? And is there any effort to get biodigesters in school and hospital settings? I don't know on any of that. Jesse, do you?
Let's jump into packaging, because that's huge, and that is the type of stuff that petrochemical plastics, we want to keep those out of compost, and they're also causing, as you said earlier, a lot of issues with recycling too. So you are, I think, starting to see the beginnings of compostable items. I like to talk about this company called Ecovative. They've created this mushroom packaging that's used to insulate electronics and other things like that that you used to see come in styrofoam, and that's a compostable material. What we need to be careful of with that compostable packaging is that it's not all home compostable. The nature of those materials really need a high heat environment to break down, so you need the internal temperatures of 140 to 160 degrees that you get at these industrial sites to make that breakdown.
Okay. He was also asking about any effort to get biodigesters in school or hospital settings. I don't know about that.
I have heard of some smaller scale digesters. In general, I feel the more successful model is a larger scale digester and a hauler service.
Okay.
Yes.
And I can add to that. So we have some anaerobic digesters across the state. There's a few out in Western New York that are taking food scraps and such. And hopefully we'll have one coming online down in right outside New York City, Long Island area. And yeah, kind of as it was mentioned, the large scale models can prove to be really successful.
Okay. Joel, thank you for that. Let me get a phone call from Christine in Canandaigua next. Go ahead, Christine.
Yes. Hi. Hi, Evan. I wanted to touch, see if folks could touch base on humanure. That's human waste. And there are some states, I believe, that might okay that. I had a friend in another state that's done it for 12 years. And if it's done right, it doesn't smell. And over 3 years, it makes beautiful, beautiful dirt for the garden. And with the disasters that are happening around the world, so around the globe so more often, it would be wonderful if people were educated prior to disasters, that the safety and, you know, taking the fear away from composting human waste. My friend did it for 12 years and had beautiful gardens. It doesn't smell, and it's very safe. So I'd like you folks to touch base on that if possible. Thanks.
Christine, thank you. Anybody know anything about this here? Missy.
I don't know anything specifically about this, but I mean, I believe that your friend is doing it successfully. One of the issues you actually touched up on is just the stigma associated with that.
Mm-hmm.
Even, you know, horse manure composting or other types of composting, there's a stigma that needs to be overcome with the not in my backyard, concerns with the toxins and things in there. So I think that the education is probably the biggest component.
Okay.
And I can jump into
yeah.
this regulatory-wise. Department of Health does have some of their own regulations regarding, like, composting toilets. And we recently revised our Part 360 solid waste regulations, and they now include regulations in regards to composting toilets. And so the issue that we kind of has is, you know, you're dealing with human waste and you want to make sure that it's composted correctly. And so if you're going to be land spreading it, we have certain regulations that kind of surround that activity.
All right, a few more minutes to go here, and I want to ask Jesse Kearns a little bit more about up-and-coming recyclers, organic recyclers, because we talked a little bit about that earlier, but how do we define that? What does that term mean? We hear that sometimes.
Sure. So this is a new session this year, and what we're trying to get across with this up-and-coming recyclers is those folks who are setting up new facilities around the state. We have a few that'll be talking about what they've done so far. Some of them are composting now. Some will be composting into the future. And the whole idea behind that was to get this group it's more than a network. It's really a community of people. So if there is any kinds of needs that these up-and-coming composters need help with, hopefully that cohort in the room will be able to offer some advice or be able to offer some sort of assistance some way, whether it's technical or actual labor assistance, whatever it might be. So just propping up those people who are they're in the tough stages of that, right, of getting things up and running and may need more support. So
it's coming? The support?
It's coming. It's going to be there. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, part of the point this hour has been seeing how things have changed in so many different layers in our community when it comes to compost. But boy, in the last 20 minutes, a lot of people are, they're kind of pointing to what's going on in recycling, which is different. I mean, the concern about what's happening in recycling is very much real. The New York Times reporting just 6 days ago that more U.S. cities are stopping recycling. Of course, it was the 1970s that was kind of the movement. We could see U.S. cities abandoning recycling or, you know, facing tax increases or other services more so than we've ever seen in 40-plus years in this country. But that doesn't mean it has to be that way for composting. It is a different model from what we're understanding about what is available out there this hour with our guests here. So I hope we've covered as much ground as possible. I'll read a couple more quick emails before the hour is out. Deirdre writes to say, Evan, thank you for this program. We composted for years until we moved to the east side on a smaller lot, so I was delighted to discover community composting. It is so important to be able to do this. There are compostable paper goods available, but unfortunately nothing local is able to handle them as far as I know. We need this option. I still think it's an improvement over regular paper goods, though. What can be done to encourage restaurants to join this effort, too? That's from Deirdre. I had some of that because she invoked your work there.
Thanks, Deidre. That's great. You know, we do actually take paper products. The only paper products that we don't accept are ones that are coated in wax or have some other kind of petroleum coating on them. But paper products are great, and they can be recycled or they can be composted. So there's a little bit of a decision there for people to make when they are composting. And my general advice is to say, you know, if the paper is really clean, recycle it. And if it's soiled in any way or crumpled up, torn up, then put it in your compost. It's really healthy for the compost.
But it does, just as a reminder, it does behoove all of us, if we're going to compost, to keep in mind that it should be a high ratio of brown to green. Brown defined as carbon-based
material? Carbon-rich sawdust, paper products, leaves.
Wait, papers is brown?
Papers are brown.
Oh, helpful. That's helpful to know. I don't know why I would have thought it's green. I should not be working in this field. paper, leaves especially. So a lot more of that than food.
Correct.
Products. But, you know, recycle all of the food products you possibly can. Just kind of load it up with a lot more brown than green, and you'll be good to go. If you don't, what happens? What's the impact here?
Composting happens. It's really if you want to have an efficient system. Okay. So worst case scenario, you've got too much nitrogen-rich stuff and nothing to balance it out, and you don't have enough air circulating with it. So when that happens, then you're going to start to get that anaerobic digestion problem. Now, that's fine if you have an anaerobic digester, but if you're anaerobic digesting in your backyard compost, that's where that rotten food waste smell is going to come from. You need to turn your piles to make sure they get enough oxygen. You need to make sure they have enough moisture, and you need to make sure that that ratio of browns to greens is favorable on the brown side.
All right, one more quick question. Jonathan wants to know, what percentage of restaurants are composting their food waste? I have no idea on that. Christine, would you even guess at that? It's probably low, but I don't know.
Yeah, I couldn't even begin to guess. Missy works with a lot of the restaurants, but yeah, I couldn't even begin to guess what it is. But it is low. I mean, in New York City, they have the required legislation, so there is more activity down in that area.
What would you guess?
The national average across all business types is around 3%.
Oh,
that's what I would guess.
But restaurants are a food-based business. Wow. Look at how far we can go with this. It's still just a big blank canvas, or largely blank, and our guests are helping us figure out how we can paint on it with maybe finished composted material products. I don't know. Jesse Kearns, thanks for taking the time and adding your expertise. We'll see you next week at Casa Larga at the Summit. Thank you for being here.
Great. Thanks so much for having me.
Missy Hall from P2I. Thanks for being here, Missy.
Thanks.
Our thanks to Brent Arnold from Community Composting. Thank you.
Thanks, Evan.
And our thanks to Christine Ellsworth from the New York State Department of Environmental Conservation. Thank you, Christine.
Thank you.
Our thanks to Rob Braden, engineer, Megan Mack, producer. I'm Evan Dawson. We will talk to you Monday on member-supported public radio.